Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation, recorded live during the May 2014 Home Education Conference held in Virginia Beach, Virginia.
Okay, welcome everybody. I guess she said the name of the presentation, so I don't have to say it again. I'm talking to you about curiosity today. So introduction, I'm a married homeschool dad. We've got three adult children, my wife and I. She's here in the audience, I won't point her out. I'm a professor of family and child development at Southern Virginia University. I'm also a young single adult bishop, so I get to spend lots of time with young people. My wife and I have been involved with LDSHE for years. I have been invited to speak here for a number of years such that I have spoken to the youth 10 years ago who since then grew up, went to Southern Virginia, took classes from me, graduated, got married, and have kids now. That's how long I've been involved with this organization, which is kind of fun to think about. So a little bit about the origin of this presentation. I've wanted for a long time to come up with some sort of a presentation that would be about the joy of learning and how you help children to hang on to that joy. My experience is that, you know, my observation is that a lot of young children, I would say most young children, love learning. There's an excitement, there's a joy that comes from learning, that joy that comes from being curious and wondering and figuring things out, discovery, exploration. There's an incredible amount of personal reward that comes from that experience. But somewhere down the road, kids start to think of school as work. And I remember a specific experience I had that really brought this home for me. I was at a friend's house, and they had some kids, and their kids were just coming home from school, and mom was saying to this boy who was maybe about 9 or 10, something about he needed to go do something, like go read something and get ready for something or something like that. And it wasn't a school-related thing. It was like a scouting-related thing or something like that. And the boy said to her, "School's over. I don't want to have to learn anything. It's playtime." Right? So in this boy's mind, there was this clear distinction between learning is like work. It's hard. It's something you do because people make you do it. When you can have fun on your own, the last thing you want to do is spend time learning. And I just thought, I don't ever want my kids to get to that point. I want them to think of learning as fun, learning as enjoyable. So how do we do that? How do we help children to hang on to that? And that's what led me to start reading about curiosity and some of these other sort of things I'm going to talk to you about. So sources, books that I would encourage you to look into. These are some of the main books that I took information from for this presentation. One of them is called Curious by Todd Kashtan, The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg, and then Flow by, oh, what a good name. Isn't that a great name? Look at that. Csikszentmihalyi. What a great name. Anyway, so the format for today. By the way, just a show of hands, have any of you ever seen me at this conference before? Okay, so you kind of know I tend to get scattered, and I use the PowerPoint to keep me on track, and also I tend to run out of time for questions at the end. So what I want to suggest to you is that if you have questions, raise your hand and we'll stop and talk about them as we go. Okay? I will try to move through things and have time for conversation today. But anyway, so I'm going to talk about research. I'm going to keep the brain jargon to a minimum. I had people advise me to do that. I don't want to just make this a jargony kind of a presentation. We're going to generate some principles based on that research that can hopefully guide application, and we'll take questions as we go, as I said. And at the end, if we get to that point, I'm just going to have some open discussion where I'll ask all of you to share with me things that you've done in your homeschool that fit with the ideas that I presented. So, first of all, the agenda. The things I want to talk to you about today are why brains like routine. Our brains do like routine. The problem with routines, what curiosity is, you know, as far as the way science, social scientists, psychologists look at curiosity and how they define it, why curiosity matters, barriers to curiosity, and then we'll get to those guiding principles, as I said. Application ideas and discussion come at the end, and as I said, I'll encourage all of you to hopefully share with me things you've done. Now, my wife usually tells me when these presentations are over that I spent too much time talking about the research and I didn't get to the application, so we're going to try to get to quickly through the... Look at that. I put pictures in the beginning of this thing, but then I ran out of time. Brains need lots of energy. 2% of your body mass. Your brain, your little 3-pound brain, is 2% of your body mass, but it consumes 20% of the energy that your body uses up, right? So it disproportionately uses a high amount of energy. So roughly 12 watts of energy is used to run your brain. Compared to most other organs, your brain is greedy. It needs lots of power, lots of energy. So here we go. Rats in a maze. We study rats in a maze, and we find that when they're first going through the maze, when they're learning the maze, there's all kinds of brain activity, and scientists know this because they have probes in their brains while they're running them. It's kind of disturbing, but that's how we know this stuff. So they're running through this maze, and there's tons of activity in their brain as they're processing all kinds of information and learning the maze. But once they learn the maze, you drop them in that little maze, and they start running their little maze to get to their cheese. And what you find is that their brain activity actually decreases. I'm talking decreases to a state lower than just a normal rat in his cage, right? So there's something about the routine that when we jump into a routine, we almost step into a different state of consciousness in which our brains kind of... The point I'm going to try to make is that it's a way to save energy, right? So the rats literally, they show decreases in the parts of the brain that are related to decision-making, and they show decreases in the parts of the brain that are related to... that went off the screen there. I think it says memory on your handout, right? Another funny picture. Hopefully you can relate to this, right? When actions become routines, the brain switches to energy saver mode. You on your phones, right? On your computers, you have energy saver mode. In a way, routines, habits, are like your brain on energy saver mode. Energy saver mode is like being on autopilot. Have you ever found yourself driving home along a very familiar route, and then suddenly you're home, and you can't remember driving there? How many of you have ever done that before, right? That's almost every hand in this room. The rest of you probably are people who just don't drive enough. But if you drive a familiar path regularly, it becomes a habit. Now, that's a very dangerous way to drive, right? You actually shouldn't do that. You should change your routine. You should drive a different pathway home. You should, because you'll be more alert. You'll be a better driver. Being in that mode is not actually a safe and healthy way to drive, but our brains do this. Your brain shuts down, and you're just like on autopilot, just going through the motions. We do this in all kinds of ways. When things become routine, our brain switches to autopilot. Much of what we do on autopilot. I would say in your typical day, more than half of what you do is going to be you on autopilot. So people have like morning routines, right? You wake up, you go to the bathroom, you brush your teeth, you get in the shower. Whatever your morning routine happens to be, you're usually just on autopilot when you do that. There's routines for like going into the kitchen and getting a snack. There's routines for like going to the bathroom. There's routines for backing your car out of the driveway. There's so many things in our lives that we do that are so regulated, that we do so often, that our brains just go into energy saver mode to try and save energy so that we can use our brains for more important things later on, right? On autopilot, we miss out on the novelty. Gosh, I didn't know that the PowerPoint was going to get cut off like that. On the novelty that exists in the moment, right? So in a way, habitual behavior pulls us out of the moment. And we miss things. We're driving down the road and we miss a beautiful sunset because we're on autopilot, right? We miss some neat event or some insight that we might have gained, or because we're on autopilot, right? Our brains are just kind of shut down, right? So curiosity defined. Here we go. This is from Kashtan. Being curious is about recognizing novelty and seizing the pleasures and meaning that it offers us. It's more than feeling good in the moment. It's more than taking advantage of novelty in front of us. It's an attitude toward living, right? So it's a very fuzzy definition. This isn't your typical, like, psychologists, when they define something like IQ or something like that, they get very precise. But this is almost like it's this way of experiencing the world. You know, it's kind of harder to wrap your head around. Here we go. More from Cashton. If we are open to unplanned opportunities, we intentionally seek out interesting items in the store. We may find a new food to get our picky kids to eat, a delicacy to spice up our week, or maybe we waste a few dollars on a culinary experiment that doesn't agree with us. Regardless, there's something enjoyable about being unsure of what to expect and being willing to seek out discoveries and act on opportunities as they arise. Right? And I want to just clue you into that. This is the first account here where we're getting the word enjoyable. Curiosity, in a way, is a feeling, right? And it's a feeling that's pleasant. It's a feeling that's it's kind of like when you're curious, there's a certain enjoyment in thinking about something and puzzling it and trying to figure it out, right? In sum, curiosity can transform trivial routine moments of habit-driven behavior into enjoyable uncertainties, discoveries, and opportunities capable of providing intimacy, right? Because connection with others happens in these little moments, insight, and meaning in life. So Cashton in his book is going to make these really big sweeping points trying to say that we need curiosity to have a fulfilling life. We need curiosity to have a happy life. I think his points are well taken, but that's not my main focus today for us as home educators. Okay, so why curiosity matters? Okay, so first of all, I want to give you a little bit of background on this new sort of movement or branch of psychology called positive psychology. For about the past 15 to 20 years, depending on where you start counting, psychologists have started thinking about psychology not just in terms of how to help people with mental disorders to get better, but what is the good life and how do we get it? How do we find happiness? How do we increase our potential? How do we develop ourselves, right? That's sort of so we believe, this is a quote from Martin Seligman, who was the head of the American Psychological Association at the time, and that guy with the last name, there he is, Csikszentmihalyi. Wow, that's a great name. We believe that a psychology of positive human functioning will arise, which achieves a scientific understanding and effective interventions to build thriving individuals, families, and communities. So this is this very sort of upbeat, what's the flip side of psychology? Besides abnormal psych, what's healthy psych and how do we get there? It's not about treating mental illness, but about helping people develop the positive, adaptive, creative, fulfilling aspects of life. Concepts such as thriving. So we got psychologists writing about things like thriving or savoring the moment, right? Doing research on, it's kind of weird, like we're going to conduct an experiment on savoring the moment. You know, that's just not the kind of thing that psychologists did in the past. They develop interventions such as, now these are ideas that are in the Oxford Handbook of Positive Psychology. It's just weird for me to see this because when I started in this field, people weren't talking about counting your blessings. Mormon prophets were talking about counting your blessings. And now we have psychologists saying counting your blessings or keeping a gratitude journal can actually help you be happier. Anyway, so that's the background from which Cashton is coming, talking about curiosity. Anyway, so here's some points that he makes. He says, trying to make yourself happy doesn't lead to happiness. And there's just a lot of research to suggest that that's true. If you go out and say, I want to be happy, I'm going to do these certain things to make myself happy because I want to feel happy, it's actually hard to find happiness that way. The highest levels of well-being and happiness, as far as we've got, I mean, we've got a whole lot of studies coming out of this positive psychology movement, suggest that the highest level of happiness come when we give service to others, to other people, to groups, to causes. Again, nobody was saying that when I first got into this field, and it's kind of fun to see this stuff. When we deploy our strengths and virtues to accomplish meaningful work, and when we savor and appreciate the joy to be found in our past and in the present moment. And it's that third bullet there. That's the one I think that Cashton is coming at with this idea of curiosity. Curiosity is one of the ways in which we can jump into that moment and find that joy, right? So curiosity is an important ingredient in creating such a happy, fulfilling life because it allows us to step into the moment and find the wonder of life and the discovery and the enjoyment and all that. So why curiosity matters for us, for educators? Let's talk about that. Here we go. There's no human competence which can be achieved in the absence of sustained interest, right? If you stop and think about it for a moment, a big part of what you do in your home education activities is how do you help your children to sustain interest, to stay on task, to continue to do what they need to do, right? So curiosity obviously is a big part of that. So curiosity is the motivation to take risks and face challenges. When you're curious, you're more likely to do that, to persist and to take risks and to face challenges. Curiosity helps us learn from these new experiences. Okay, so when you're curious, you're going to go and explore and do things that you might not normally do. And when you're curious, you're actually more likely to integrate that experience into your long-term memory. Right? So that's good stuff. Here we go, Cashton again. Curiosity is hardwired in the brain, and its specific function is to urge us to explore, discover, and grow. It is the engine of our evolving self. Without curiosity, we are unable to sustain our attention. We avoid risks. We abort challenging tasks. We compromise our intellectual development. We fail to achieve competencies and strengths. We limit our ability to form relationships with others, other people, and essentially stagnate. So why curiosity matters, here we go. This is, he has these nice little bullets at one point in the book that I really liked, and I've kind of changed them a little bit, but curiosity leads to exploration. Exploration leads to discovery. Discovery creates satisfaction, right? There are two kinds of satisfaction that we get from learning. One of them is the release of tension. Sometimes you're frustrated trying to figure something out, and when you finally figure it out, you get that kind of aha, oh yeah, and it's kind of like relaxing, and you get all this brain chemistry that is rewarding to you, right? But sometimes it's actually the joy of the discovery, while not once you get to the end, but while you're doing it, there's a sort of happiness and joy that comes along. The satisfaction leads to repetition, right? And repetition is going to lead to competence and mastery. The more your kids, I mean, who was it that Malcolm Gladwell that said the 1,000 hours thing, right? You spend, what was it? Was it 1,000 or was it 10,000? 10,000. 10,000 hours. You spend 10,000 hours doing anything and you're going to develop mastery in it, right? Anyway, so that's the idea, repetition. So curiosity is going to lead to that. Competence and mastery is going to lead to knowledge and skill growth, right? So I think that's a wonderful, nice framework for to understand curiosity as the starting point for all these really important things that we want to happen for our children. Let's go on. Curiosity is, here's another really important reason. I think this was in the little description for the little blurb for this class. Curiosity is better than IQ at predicting grades. Okay. You take first graders and you track them through to fifth or sixth grade in a longitudinal study. And you took their IQ at first grade and you look and see how well that predicts grades. It doesn't predict grades as well as curiosity. So what the research is basically saying is curious kids learn more in school and do better in school, not necessarily smart kids learn more and do better in school, right? Achievement test scores, same thing. Standardized test scores, curiosity is the better predictor. Transfer of knowledge learned into long-term interests and careers. I know this is a big deal for us as homeschoolers, right? We want our kids to like succeed and go off in the world and do all these things with their lives. And yes, curiosity is the thing that helps you to sort of learn something and see its value and make the connection and hang on to it and use it later on. Okay, so barriers to curiosity. Some of the things that prevent us from routines and habits. Now, my wife told me that, you know, I got to be careful here because routines. Oh, question. Go ahead.
I was just wondering, on your last slide, can you hear me?
Yes. That's a really good question. Wow. The question is, how are they measuring curiosity? Okay, so here's the thing. First of all, I don't totally agree with Cashton, because I think sometimes they're measuring curiosity, but sometimes what they're really measuring is persistence, right? Persistence in the face of failure. That to me, is a really important, essential. I mean, that's why my other presentation is about helping discouraged learners to be persistent, right? But really, they're trying to come up with, what they're doing is they're looking at, you give a kid, okay, here's an example. Give a kid a puzzle that's unsolvable and see how long he works on it and what he does to try and figure it out and how he, and talk to him about what he does and why and all that to explore that issue. Or sometimes you give a kid a puzzle and tell him when he's done with the puzzle, he'll get a cookie. You're going to leave the room for a while and come back and give him the cookie. But if he finishes the first puzzle while you're gone, he can work on the some of the other puzzles that are around in the room. And you just watch to see what the kid does with, you know, like he finishes the puzzle and he sits there and waits for his cookie, or does he finish the puzzle and keep working on the next cookie and the next puzzle and the next puzzle? Does that make sense? So there's different ways in which they try to get at curiosity with in-lab experimental stuff. But, yeah, that's a good question, and I guess I should be better prepared for it, but I guess part of it is I'm just not really convinced that they're always measuring curiosity myself, so I have your question. Okay, anyway, so barriers to curiosity. So routines are necessary. I will say that as much as I need to reassure all of you that you can have routines in your home. Kids need routines. Kids thrive on routines and predictability. That's good stuff. Routines, habits. But here we go. So being on autopilot, missing the novelty. You don't want to set things up so that things become so routine that while your kid is actually working on homeschool stuff, it's just repetition, right? Assuming there is nothing left to learn from the familiar, okay? I remember once my freshman year in college, I had this professor in, I don't know what it was, biology, some kind of biology course like the earth science or biology kind of a course, and he told us to go out to a particular place in the country and sit down with a yardstick and map out a 3-foot by 3-foot square and just look at it, and look at all the life that was there, and catalog in detail everything we saw. And I was blown away by how much stuff I saw in a little 3-foot by 3-foot square of just outside, outdoors, that I had never paid attention to. And it was just, it's that kind of an experience that's always all around us. The moment is always there, and it's always filled with all kinds of opportunities for discovery. And we just don't want to miss that, right? So here's another reason why it's a barrier to curiosity is it's not an easy thing to change. You can't just, like, it's not like your desires can determine, like, I will now be curious, you know? You can't do that. It's almost like there's something deeper about, you know, it's about your way of being, your way of engaging in the world, and it's, you can't just tell your kids, okay, be curious now. You know, okay, Mom, you know, it doesn't work that way. So it's not about how much we pay attention. It's not about whether we pay attention, but it's about how we pay attention, the quality of our attention, right? And that's a tricky thing to get at. And this is kind of, you know, cutting edge. So part of some of the most satisfying answers I might be able to give to you, I probably can't because we don't have the research yet. Like, how do I make my kid curious? We don't have real clear answers to that, but I'll try to come up with some stuff for you today. Another barrier, too many rules. Raise your hand, stay at your desk, be quiet, finish your math sheet before you read, do it now, listen to the teacher when she speaks. Lots and lots of rules can kind of put kids in a mode where they don't feel easily able to step into that moment and be curious. Education that's too regimented. So too much standardized test prep, too much memorization of facts, those kinds of really regimented styles of education. Would potentially put kids at risk for, you know, curiosity, fear. Okay, we're hardwired for caution and anxiety. It's true that we're hardwired for curiosity. There are mechanisms in our brain that seem to encourage us to want to explore and learn because that's a way to develop new skills and things. But there are other mechanisms that seem to be in place to help keep us alive, right? We tend to think things like, what if someone breaks into my house and tries to kill me, you know, and so I go lock the door, and, you know, we have these kind of, like, thoughts and fears, and that seems to be pretty common for people, right? So we tend to overestimate risk, and we tend to underestimate the value of being curious. So our default, psychologists will talk about how there's, like, this set point. Our default set point for these issues is that we tend to have what's called, they call it a negativity bias. We tend to assume bad things in general. It seems to be cross-cultural human universal that we kind of are cautious like that, right? So curiosity isn't the norm. It's the thing that we need to try to encourage and help to happen every now and then. Okay. So, oh, questions. Sorry. Go ahead. Okay. Yes, very good. And we're going to get to that. That's one of my, I've got like at the end seven principles that I've managed to come up with about curiosity, and that's one of them. So you're right, spot on. Excellent comment. Other questions? There was over here. Go ahead.
Me?
Yeah.
Okay, so mine was about routines. I'm sorry, I had my hand raised before.
Okay.
But because, you know, like our kids, like you said, they thrive on routine. They need some things that are set every day that happen every day that they can count on. So how do you... So I'm just like struggling with... So I create this routine, but... I don't want that to make his brain start functioning at that lower level.
Right. Now, and the truth is, it's not that, it's not like, oh, just because they do math every day at 10 means that he's going to go into autopilot. You can still, the way you do the math and the way you introduce, you know, it's not as simple as saying if there's a routine, then your kid's in autopilot mode.
So
but
introducing the novelty into how you approach each thing in your routine.
Yeah. And some of it's going to be as simple as the questions and the modeling and the excitement and the things like that that you do. Yeah, so you're all wanting to get to the application. This is what my wife always tells me. Yeah, this is great. So, I forgot to say the question. Oh, say your question again. The question was, it's like a how, it's an application question, right?
Right. Well, mine was we have routine, their kids need that. How do we introduce them to the novel?
So how do we introduce novelty into routine? I think I'm going to... Okay, so let's come back to your question when we get to the application stuff at the end. Other questions? There were other questions? Okay. My wife is always spot on with her predictions about how people are going to react. So there we go. Okay, so as I said, is there a nice bunch of research studies that show you how to help your child become curious? No. All you have is social scientists saying, curiosity is one of the most important things you could give to your child, but we don't know how to do that yet. So what I did was I went back to 1990 to a book by Csikszentmihalyi, or whatever the guy's name is. It's called Flow. And it's similar to curiosity. It's not really this new curiosity research, but Csikszentmihalyi, or however you say his name, he's still alive, and I feel bad because he's going to get me in trouble or something. He's going to hear this. That's my fear. He was doing research on optimal experience, right? So there's not a lot of research on curiosity, but there's this related experience, flow, optimal experience. He was talking about different states of mind, in effect, that people get into, and he uses the flow is his word for this. Here we go. Let's just start going through it. I pulled a definition from Wikipedia. I apologize. But I looked all through his book, and nowhere does he actually give a really concise definition of flow. It drove me crazy. Anyway, the mental state of operation in which a person performing an activity is fully immersed in a feeling of energized focus, full involvement, and enjoyment in the process of the activity. So this is almost like the opposite of being on autopilot. But it, in a way, has a similar quality in that you lose track of time, right? How many of you have ever been so immersed in like a book, like a total page turner, or some activity where you were so focused that you lost track of time, right? We've all had that experience. Maybe with sports, or maybe with playing a musical instrument, or with reading. You know, you talk to your kids, they're reading Harry Potter, and, you know, they lose track of time, right? They're just whatever things that they're into, right? That's what he's talking about with flow. It's a mental state of being. You're immersed in the moment, and there's feelings of enjoyment. So I want you to see that's the pattern to curiosity, right? Question.
Yeah, it sounds a lot like this is what happens when people operate in an area of stress.
Yes.
So does that mean that curiosity is situational? That people will be curious about some things, but not about other things?
I think at least, okay, so the question is, he said, this sounds like what happens when people operate from a position of strength, and does that mean that curiosity is situational, like they might be more likely to be curious about certain things? And I have to say yes, as a starting point, yes. There's going to be some truth to that, that some of your kids are going to be like, we had a son who was like outer space and bugs, you know? Any kind of bug that we see in our house would lead to all kinds of curiosity and observation and study, right? So yeah, there's a sense in which there's these situational, the more he knew, the more curious he was, and it kind of, yeah, some of that stuff was happening. That's a good comment. Anyway, so back to this, I just wanted you to see there's some parallels here. He's talking about the experience of being in the moment, being fully immersed, and that there's an enjoyment there. The diagram. This is from his book. Okay, so he has this diagram to show you how flow works. And his example is a boy trying to learn how to play tennis, and the boy's name is Alex. But my name is Ariel, and that also starts with an A, and I play racquetball, so I figured I would give you the example with me playing racquetball. If you look at A1, there's a certain point when you first start to learn to play a sport, like racquetball, say, where your goal is just to hit the ball, right? You're at a level of competency that's so minimal that just the simplest task can keep you engaged, and you might even get to flow just by being in a court alone and trying to hit the ball consistently low and to the corner and just doing that, and that can become sort of an experience for you. But eventually, you get good at it, and then that activity becomes boring, right? I mean, that's the way life works. It's like as soon as you get good at something at a certain level of skill, that activity becomes boring, and you need greater challenge. So that's probably his main point here, is that flow is related to the level of challenge you're experiencing. If I'm playing racquetball against a beginner, in a way, I'm bored. And so I have to find ways to make it interesting, like, okay, how can I help this person improve their game, and what can I teach them and all that? And in fact, I'm increasing the challenge level by doing that in my own mind, right? I'm thinking about not just the game and how to beat this person, because I can easily beat this person, but it's like, how can I play in a way, where can I place the ball to get him to practice his backhand, because he needs more practice on his backhand. So what happens when I play someone who's at a lower skill level? I get bored. What happens when I play someone who's at a much higher skill level than me, who can totally spank me? I get no point. I get frustrated, right? Anxiety, frustration, all that, right? So there's this important point here that he's offering us, which is what you want to do to encourage flow is to create a level of challenge that's not, it's kind of like not too challenging, not too easy, right? But challenging, yes, but not too challenging. We want to challenge our children, but too high a level of challenge can produce anxiety. Too low a level of challenge can produce boredom. The other thing I like about this model is that you can look at your kid and really easily observe where you need to go. If you've got a kid who's anxious, not always, but usually, that's because the challenge level is too high. If you've got a kid who's bored, that means you need to increase the challenge level, right? So this is, I think this is kind of a helpful model, and it's not quite curiosity, but I think it's getting us there. It's getting us closer to the point. I thought I saw a hand, but I didn't, so let's go on. Okay. Wow. Okay, so principles and application. This is awesome. I'm just about a little bit more than halfway through, and I'm getting to the application stuff. Okay, so prioritize curiosity. That's my first point. The first thing that I would offer to you, write phrases in your home education mission statement like learning is fun, the joy of discovery. Emphasize the fun part of it. Make that an important goal of what you're trying to accomplish for your children. Have the goal that you want your children to hang on to that feeling that learning is fun, that discovering and figuring things out is satisfying and enjoying, right? Joyful. Evaluate your progress and make sure that it actually happens. So don't just write the goal, but actually talk with your kids and observe and plan and make sure that the fun, the enjoyment, that kind of enjoyment happens, not just the fun like a fun activity. Go ahead, please.
Is part of this process understanding that curiosity is different depending on what you're doing?
Yes. I mean, I like what you're saying. Can you elaborate on that? Okay, so this is a really good comment. What I want to do eventually is come out with the mic and make you guys talk into the mic, and I think I almost wish I could have had you come up and talk into the mic because that was wonderful. But yeah, so curiosity is in the broadest sense, there could be curiosity about an academic subject like science or literature, but there could be curiosity about relationships, or curiosity I think even applies to sports and how do you throw the baseball just the right way, and what are you doing exactly? And I think there's all kinds of ways in which it can apply to broader things than just like math and science and reading and stuff like that. Okay. Model and communicate as far as curiosity goes. So, and this was the point that someone already made in the audience, right? Be curious yourself. Open yourself up to the moment. Learn new things. Let them see you love learning, right? If you hate math, do not tell your children that you hate math. Lie to them and say, I love math. Math is so exciting. Math just makes me, I wake up in the morning and I think, I can't wait to do math with you kids, right? Model that excitement. And if you can, I'm a firm believer in the idea of fake it till you make it. I think that you can convince yourself that math is fun even if you hate math. And I have a daughter. I'll just share her story. One of my daughters, Hannah, who was a part of this conference for years, she was reading a book, you know, one of these books for young adult readers, you know, the teenage kind of books. And in the book, the character was not good at math, and she decided that she was going to start liking math. And she just told herself, I'm going to like math from now on. And she liked math and started doing better. And so Hannah, reading this, thought, I'm going to do that. And Hannah just made up her mind that she liked math. I don't know. What was the book? Do you know the book? Oh, bad story then. I should have known the name of the book. But Hannah just convinced herself that she likes math. She said, I'm going to like math from now on. And she started doing math with a smile on her face. And she started liking it more. And she started understanding it better. And she didn't turn into a math major in college. But she certainly, like, math was no longer the struggle with us to get her to do the work, right? Anyway, so that's contagious. Let them see you doing that, right? Share your experiences of curiosity and joy with your children, right? So become that person first and then share that with your kids. Invite them to share their own experiences with learning, then point out their curiosity and feelings of joy, right? Kids, younger kids I'm thinking right now, right, don't always pay attention to feelings, and they'll miss the feelings part of it. And so when you've got that little five-year-old who's all excited and telling you about all this stuff, you can talk about the thing that he's excited about, but you can also point out to him, isn't it fun to learn? Isn't it exciting? What do you feel right now? You know, and basically what I'm suggesting is that idea of savoring that moment and savoring that experience and getting more out of that experience, getting the most you can out of that moment of joy, of discovery, right? Okay. Share the joy. Don't shut them down when they're excited about learning. Don't stop the flow. In fact, if you can get into the moment with them, if you can, get into the moment with them. So if you've got, so this is the part where I think routine could be just, you need to be flexible with your routine. If you've got a kid and he's totally in the zone there and he's just going at math and suddenly on your schedule you say, okay, math is over now, now we start reading, don't shut that down for him. Just let him go with what's going on there. Let the child be immersed in that experience. And if you can, if anything, jump into that experience with him. You know, can you step into that moment and find where that kid's at with the discovery and what's happening and understand his experience? When they come to you excited to share what they're learning, stop what you're doing, embrace the moment, and share in the joy. Now, I know that's tricky because you've got dinner, or you've got someone on the phone, or you've got something on the computer. We're always, kids interrupt. You know, my kids, I remember, they had like this special magical ability to know when you're on the phone, right? And that's when they come and bug you for things, right? And we can get to this point where we're just kind of like, you know, oh, my kid is here wanting something, and you know you're not supposed to interrupt. Don't interrupt mom when she's doing this or that. But maybe make an exception in your house. Have a rule that says, you can't interrupt me for these kinds of things when I'm on the phone, but, you know, if you've just learned something exciting, I always want you to come and tell me about that, right? Maybe for younger kids where they can't delay. But once they're old enough to delay, then it could just be like, talk to me about it later, right? But find ways to catch them in those moments and let them talk to you about those things and share them with you. Value curiosity. Okay, so observe them and point out their experiences with curiosity, and then praise the process. Praise them for their curiosity. That's the way that you can show that you value that. So value the process, not the outcome. Praise them for being curious, not for being clever. Praise sustained interest. Praise persistence. Right? Those are the things that you care about as a home educator. Those are the things that you're trying to get your kid to do. So make them aware of that, praise it, make them feel good about doing it, right? Routines are necessary, but don't overdo it. Okay, so this goes now to your question. So let me, if we don't answer your question, then raise your hand again. Any time is learning time. Okay, that was one of the things that when we started our home education stuff, you know, I'm kind of out of the loop. I'm a dad. Mom does everything. I get home and homeschool's kind of over. And so as we were talking about what we wanted to do, one of the things that I was advocating for was I wanted to have a rule in our household that any time is learning time. And mostly that was just so that I could be more involved in the homeschooling. Like if my kids wanted to learn something and they might come to me at 8 o'clock at night and say, hey, Dad, can you come and talk to me about this or show me that or how does this work? Or so, as I thought back on it, though, I think that's a very good rule in terms of curiosity, right? So if the routine is that learning happens between here and here, then you're already kind of setting some boundaries on when curiosity is going to be happening. And so if you kind of open up the boundaries and say, hey, anytime is a time to learn. If it's 9 o'clock at night and something jumps into your head and you want to know about it and you're curious, come and talk to us about it, right? I'm a big advocate. I mean, I'm a child development professor, so I'm a big advocate of child-directed, child-centered education. And I would say if you don't, maybe you're not into that philosophy, but I would just say do as much of that as you can, as you're comfortable with. As much as possible, set things up, structure things so that your children have some control over what they study and how long they study it and when they study it and all that kind of stuff. Give them some flexibility there because that'll allow, again, for them to get into the flow. That'll allow for them to pursue their curiosity. I think that's going to just be very helpful. Mary Poppins, here we go. That's a verb, by the way. Mary Poppins, the unavoidable routines. I don't know if anyone's used Mary Poppins as a verb before. I'm hoping I'm the first person to do that. So here we go. She says, in every job that must be done, there is an element of fun. You find the fun and snap, the job's a game, right? You've all heard that before, I hope. So what does that mean? Well, I think there's something we can learn from that. Finding it involves entering into the moment, right? That's focusing closely on each step of the task might be an example. Okay, so what I'm suggesting is you've got a task, it's a routine, and your kids have to do it. Maybe they're learning how to handwrite or something like that, where they just repetition is necessary and you have to get them to do some repetition. If there's some kind of a task that you can have the child focus on all the little details of the task and think about them and analyze them and pay attention to each one of them, as soon as you enter into more of that kind of a detail there, you're kind of like stepping into the moment, thinking more about what exactly is my hand doing and how does it work and all that. So that might be a strategy to find the it. And another strategy to find the it, as we've already said, is just increasing the level of challenge. So maybe if there's a task and it's a repetitive task, could you tell the child, I want you to do this, but I also want you to be thinking about how could we do it better, right? Or like me playing racquetball, it's not just, here's this person, I could beat them easily, but how can I place the ball so that they'll improve their game, right? I increase the level of challenge, and suddenly it's more easy for me to get engaged and to be curious and to be thinking, right? Or the other one, here's an example from my own life. When I was in grad school, I had to do lots of reading. More reading than you can shake a stick at. I remember I had this one class where imagine a binder of readings that was 3.5 inches thick, double-sided, and there were two of them, and that's what I read in one quarter. And these are scientific studies, not fun, easy reading. These are like two columns, small text. Oh, it was hard. Good, 15 minutes. No, I'm happy. She's saying 15 minutes, and for once I'm like, woohoo, this is great. So I had to do so much reading, and it would just get to be like a chore. Like, we're, you know, like sometimes the studies were exciting and they would keep me engaged, but sometimes, no, I just have to read this, you know, these five studies that I don't care at all about. And so I would do this thing where I would think to myself, you know, you're highlighting as you read all the key points, right? And I, in effect, found an it. I found a way to make it a game. I thought, how could I highlight this chapter so that the words, I guess what it boils down to is, here's the rule. What's the smallest amount of words that I can highlight that would help me get the chapter? That's how I started. But as I started doing that, what I realized was I could actually highlight just a word here, a word here, a word here, and have them spell out a sentence, right? And so what I was doing was I was thinking, how can I highlight this chapter so that it spells out a sentence summary of the chapter, right? So the, and then main, and then point of, you know, and I would literally do that as a game, and it kept me engaged, and it made the readings more interesting, right? Now, you may be thinking, that guy's crazy, but it worked for me. For you, it might not work, but that's this. Some of this is going to vary with your children, right? Some strategies might work for one kid and not for another, but I guess what I want to suggest is if they can find a way to increase the challenge, to make it engaging and challenging and like a game, then that's a good thing. And of course, making it a real game, like Jeopardy or something, that's nothing wrong with that. Challenging, but not too challenging. So the golden mean, not too easy, not too hard. We've already kind of said that. It's the Goldilocks principle, right? This porridge is too hot, this porridge is too cold, this level of challenge is just right. High anxiety usually means too challenging. Boredom usually means too easy. We've already kind of said that. Here we go. Minimize their fear and anxiety about learning. Okay, so people do have fears and anxieties sometimes about learning, about their performance. Some kids are more anxious than others by nature, right? Some of you, hopefully if you have more than one kid, you probably already know this, right? That some kids are a little bit more anxious than other kids are. So your parenting can make a big difference. So specifically the right kinds of praise, which we've already talked about, and encouragement. I would say praise them for the process, not necessarily the outcome. I have a student who just graduated this semester. She's an A student. She's one of my brightest students. And in one of her papers this semester, we were taking a class, a parenting class, and she had to write an evaluation of her parents' parenting of her. And one of the things she said was that her mom, when she was little, praised her and told her, "You're smart. Oh, you're so smart." And she said that all the time. And after a while, this little girl became nervous about doing anything that might make her look dumb, right? She became nervous about anything that might make her mom not want to say, "Oh, you're so smart." And so she started becoming anxious about learning, and she started being real careful about the kind of tasks she took on, and it kind of changed her whole outlook on learning. Learning was about proving that you're smart, not about the joy and the excitement, right? So, and then there was a lot of anxiety and concerns about her learning too because of that. Anyway, avoid upward comparisons. So I'd say in general, avoid any kind of comparisons. The only kind of comparisons you want your kid to do is, this is where I used to be at, this is where I'm at now, I've progressed, right? Those are really healthy comparisons, but I'm not as smart as my brother Timmy, or I'm not as smart as so-and-so. Those are really unhealthy comparisons, so you should avoid them, and you should encourage your children to avoid them. Emotion coaching, there's a book by John Gottman called Raising an Emotionally Intelligent Child. So if you have a child who has a particular, in other words, one thing is to say that my child has fear about learning, but another thing is to say my child has a lot of fear and anxiety in general. If you have a child who just has some problems with fear and anxiety, I'd recommend that book, Emotion Coaching. But certainly the strategies that he talks about in that book, Emotion Coaching, would be helpful with a child who's having feelings about inadequacy or anxiety about learning. By the way, in the other presentation I'm going to do later today, I actually go into detail and talk about emotion coaching, or at least I plan to. And then teaching optimism. I also will talk about that in the other presentation. But helping your children to be optimistic and again, I would just say, go find the book. It's by Martin Seligman. It's called The Optimistic Child. It's a wonderful, both of these books are like more than 10 years old, so you can find them in your library somewhere or find them online for $3 or 50 cents probably. Okay, so application discussion. Here we go. Here are the seven ideas I just threw your way. And my two questions for you are, what have you done to encourage curiosity, and how will or might you apply these ideas yourself? And I'm going to like take the mic off and see if I can get some of you to talk. We have 10 minutes, roughly 9 minutes or so. We have about 9 minutes, and I'll take questions. I guess I'll take questions, and then if you have ideas, I'm going to go put the mic on you or try to. Go ahead.
I have a son. He is 7 years old, and he's brilliant. But he does not like to challenge himself no matter what I try. He is very anxious about the initial challenge, but once you get him started, you can't get him to stop. How do I work through that so he's not so anxious to try new things?
I want answers from you people. Go ahead. You have an answer.
There's a book called Mindset. The book called Mindset talks about fixed versus growth mindset. And the people with the fixed mindset think, if I do this thing and I fail at it, that labels me as a failure, okay? And so they hesitate to try new things, just like this little girl. Her mom was teaching her a fixed mindset by saying, you're so smart. Instead of, wow, what hard work you did. That was how did you do that? So when we want to encourage a growth mindset, we say, you know, when we try new things, that's how our brain learns. We teach how our brain learns, and then that's, you know, by trying new things and working on it, that makes us get smarter, you know. Anyway, excellent book. The mindset affects everything, how you respond in relationships, how you respond in school, really helps.
It is a good book, and my second presentation today is going to get a whole lot of mindset in there, so feel free to come to that if you want to. Okay, so your question was specifically, did that answer your question?
It helped.
Okay. So your question was more about getting him to start, the initial starting of the process.
Yes, it's like pulling teeth, you know.
Is the anxiety about feeling like he's not smart, or what kind of anxiety are we talking about?
Just general anxiety.
Just for any, like learning anything new.
One example that comes to mind is a couple years ago, we tried to get him to jump off the trampoline, you know, or jump off the diving board into the pool, something that's fun and all the kids love it. It took us all summer, and he just couldn't do it. But now we can't keep him off the diving board. He just loves it. But it's that initial step.
Okay. We've got a dad back here that wants to answer. Go ahead. That's a good answer. So this is life. Do you want to respond to this too?
Sure. Okay. Reason for what he's done, maybe have him recognize where he'd be if he never tried all those things. He can make a list. Like, I would not know how to flip on the trampoline. I'd have to know that I would work.
Compare.
Made a Lego tower. Whatever he's been scared to do.
Okay, so help him to see the progress, right? Help him to see that. Okay, good.
And you gotta
do that one good comparison.
Okay. Yeah, I say, and making sure there's no shame. You know, you're encouraging and you're praising the attempt, the trying, but you're not shaming for, you know, or making him feel bad if he chooses not to. And so then you're focusing on the positive and giving them opportunities to try new things, but if they choose not to, that's their choice and that's okay. And maybe reintroduce it a little bit later and just continuing to focus on the positive. Because I have a daughter who's very, very reserved as well, and we just exposed and provided those opportunities. But if she chose not to, that was okay too. And now that she's a little older, she actually chooses to do things on her own because I think, you know, just building that confidence.
Okay, thank you. And one more, let's take one more comment. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I have a son, he's almost 14, and his siblings, it's very obvious their skills and their talents, they do well, and he often feels inferior. And so this past year, I'm ashamed it's taken this long, but it's just been really hard to notice what his talents are. And this year I noticed it's not so much skills, but characteristics and traits he has. And people at church started telling me what a great Deacon's Quorum president he was and what a great leader he was to the other youth. And he would call, and you know, someone, he'd go up to the lady whose son doesn't come to church and ask about her son. And So I wrote down one day a list of the qualities that he had, and I realized that this kid may be a great leader in the church someday, and that he has great empathy for others. And so even though he doesn't build, you know, the motorized Lego system, and he doesn't make, you know, a cape with fondant like his much younger siblings, that he had these great qualities. And so I've been praising him for those qualities, and I hope that helps you, because it took me way too long to figure it out with him.
Good answer. I'll just say a couple of things really quickly. First of all, there might be a temperament issue going on here, right? That some children are just, you know, if you've ever taught primary and you've said, hey, today we're going to go out onto the lawn and have our lesson outside in the sun, and almost all the kids go, hooray, and then there's this one kid in the class who goes, what? We can't, teacher, we can't go outside. There's no chalkboard, and how will we sit, and what will we, you know, there's that kid who you've interrupted his routine, and he's troubled by that. And so some kids are just, you know, there's temperament issues there, where some kids have a more, not, I don't want to use the word difficult temperament, but what it really means is that they don't adapt well to new things and changes. And so what you're doing is exactly the right thing to do. Just encourage them and then help them to see the advantages. But then there's one more comment I want to make, which is just like a caveat, which is we have a society that really emphasizes, if this were a social issue, right? If this were about making friends and trying new things, we have a society that really emphasizes extroverts. Like, you know, if you're not an extrovert, you're just not with it. You know, there's something wrong with you if you like sitting around and reading books. If you find being in big crowds and talking to people exhausting, there must be something wrong with you. But the truth is, about half of us are introverts, and we're quite comfortable. I guess there's two issues going on. One of them is shyness. Shyness is an anxiety and fear of trying new social situations. But there's another thing, which is just introversion. Some kids are just going to be quiet and want to read books and do their own thing, and that's, we need to like give them permission to do that. I'm probably out of time.
Almost.
A question? Oh, question. Go ahead.
Or a comment. Something that helps that I've been latching onto more and more is just to have more curiosity in our family. We just are trying to simplify. I'll use the word minimalize, or like, you know, like not overschedule our time, not overschedule. Because it's such a world of, like, we almost get a badge of honor, like, we're so busy, and homeschoolers do it just as much, if not more. Like, we could be in 50 clubs, and you know, they're in all these good things, kind of good, better, best, but sometimes the best thing to do is to clear your schedule a little more, sit by the river, and just, you know, just the slow things that allow curiosity and even a little bit of boredom, because then you get curious and you're not constantly going. And also for me, like, I'm almost a hoarder, not really, but, you know, like, but, you know, the idea of minimalizing, so having less, like, that really is important, so that I'm not, like, thinking about cleaning all the time, or we're having to spend so much energy on organization and cleaning, you know, the things to survive. But we can be together. So I think the idea of really thinking about simplifying our things and our life to really focus on what we want and allowing more space in our minds and our souls.
Yeah, I think that's a good, being too busy could also stop curiosity. I think that's a great comment. Okay, we're probably out of time, so thank you very much.
LDS Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.